It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. It's a minute and a half past the hour, and we begin a brand new broadcast here at the Horn. It is the sixth day of December 2017. Yes, this is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. This program is live right now in the Eastern Standard Time Zone. Thanks for all. Okay, cool. I'm being told 5x5 on the high quality MP3 White Rose stream. Oh. Man, knock wood. Good. Everything's running true, fast, and hot. Very good, very good, very good. This is a listener-supported program, so let's begin by thanking the listeners who are responsible for bringing you a portion of this evening's program. Yes, indeed. We have thanks to send out, of course, to Chris in Germany, as well as to Sal. Thank you, Sal. Longtime supporters of the program, both. Thank you very kindly to Laurel in Minnesota, soon to not have Al Franken for his senator. Thank you to Kitty in Boston. Thank you to Bob there in North Carolina. Thank you. And thanks very kindly to Alex in New York. Brock in PA also helped bring the program to you this evening, as did Don. Thank you, Don. And so too did Kim in New Jersey. All of which taken together means that, hey, it's a very cool thing. We only have, get this, $80 to raise this evening. That's right. We've only got $80 to finish fundraising for this evening, and a total of $480 to finish fundraising for the first full week of December. I'm excited by that, and I sure do hope that I don't have to mention that again for the rest of the program. We just knocked that $80 out of the park and get with what is probably going to be a busy and, I don't know, maybe contentious midweek program. I know. We do the prayer meeting Wednesday shtick, and I like it and you like it, but I don't have the stomach for it today. I mean, I got lots of creepy religion industry stories. There's no doubt about that. But there's an elephant in the room, and we're gonna have to talk about it. I'll be candid. I was having a conversation with our friend Joy a little bit earlier, and I said, you know, I've got a sneaking suspicion that whatever I say this evening is gonna piss off half the community, and you know that's not my goal. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. That's not my goal at all. we talk about issues, and every now and then we run across one that is just bound, no two ways about it, to... Then again, you know, maybe I'm reading it wrong. But if you'll forgive me, I'm gonna dispense with the prayer meeting Wednesday shtick. On the other hand, I do want to let you know about Cometic Comfrey. Cometic Comfrey from Horn Nutraceuticals and the peripatetic scientists therein will give you the strength to do things that you don't know if you have the strength to do. Cometic Comfrey from Horn Labs is a proprietary blend of comfrey that has been been certified vegan, GMO-free, cage-free, cruelty-free, gluten-free, and actually free of any nutritional value whatsoever. It's just another bullshit product from Horn Nutraceuticals, because we couldn't be a real, live, honest-to-goodness 12-year-old radio program unless we had a bullshit nutritional supplement to try to hustle to credulous people who might wander by. Bear in mind, I don't expect anybody in the Horn Family Community Congregation to ever fall for this, because I'm sure you don't fall for the other vitamin ads either, or nutritional supplement ads, as the case may be. Okay? But no, really, Cometic Comfrey is just what you need in conflict-laden days such as today. Cometic Comfrey also comes to you if you order a 3-month supply for only $111.02 with a bundle of little test strips that you can use to verify our claims here at the Horn that Cometic Comfrey has no nutritional value whatsoever. You know, I've never cared much for comfrey, but thanks to Cometic Comfrey from Horn Nutraceuticals, we've changed our name, by the way, and we've even got a Twitter account. Cometic Comfrey from Horn Nutraceuticals will answer your questions. It'll do whatever it is that you put faith in it to do, and to that extent, we can work in some prayer meeting stuff. It's faith-based nutritional supplementation is what it is. Cometic Comfrey from Horn Nutraceuticals. Accept no substitutes, post no bills, use no hooks, this side up, COD, FOB, NOAA. Cometic Comfrey, only from Horn Nutraceuticals. Try yours today. Operators aren't standing by. Yes. So, I guess it's just convenient that it worked out this way, but I've got a lengthy email from Ron and Raleigh that addresses what is at least at the top of my mind this evening, namely the hunting and skinning of Al Franken. Meinads, C. Meinads, M-A-E-N-A-D-S. Classical reference, big deal. See also Shakespeare, William, the play Julius Caesar, which contains the line, Cassius has a lean and hungry look. That one too. Anyway, under the subject line, please set me straight. Ron in Raleigh writes, Hey Bob.
Hey Ron.
Seems that every day new allegations of sexual misconduct are coming forth. Most of these incidents are from years ago. These accusations are enough to cause men to be fired, losing their ability to earn a living from now on. No proof seems to be needed, just the accusation. Seems women are incredibly fragile. While I don't think anyone should be touched against their will, I do believe at some point you should be able to put these experiences behind you. Continuing, I speak from experience. When I was in high school, my guidance counselor grabbed my crotch. I slapped his hand away. He showed up at my dorm a year later when I was in college. I told him Whatever he had in mind, it wasn't going to happen. I remember that it happened, but I was not scarred for life, nor did I come out years later with an accusation. Was my reaction to the incident a function of my being male? It seems that there is a lot of piling on going on, and we've lost a lot of progressive politicians, because there's no defense against the allegation of sexual misconduct. No apology will suffice, no monetary settlement will assuage the pain of being smacked on the butt or whatever behavior has occurred. This is, of course, exclusive, I'll add editorially, of you know, rape. Roy Moore will probably be seated in the Senate, and every other Republican with allegations against them will continue to serve. Should we, before we put anyone up for elected office, put out a call for anyone that might have a past experience that could be construed as sexual misconduct? If anyone comes forth to proof, no proof. If anyone comes forth, no proof is necessary. The candidate should be immediately disqualified. There's a lot to work with there. And the issue remains troubling. I couldn't care less what Time Magazine or who Time Magazine names as its thingamajig of the who's ever, especially now that the Koch brothers are probably going to buy it. So let's get that out of the way. But I'm deeply disturbed by what happened today with Senator Franken. A group of female senators who were quickly joined by some Democratic senators like Joe Donnelly of Indiana, who's about as much of a Democrat as I am a Republican. But also including Sherrod Brown of Ohio, who has some respectable progressive creds. And most lately, and then Robert Casey in Pennsylvania and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer have all declared that Senator Al Franken of Minnesota, one of the more effective senators that the minority has, should resign from the Senate before there has even been a full hearing on any allegations against him. Again, let me reiterate that. They want Al Franken to resign from the Senate before anything is even adduced or proven. Well, you know, maybe being big-time senatorial insiders, maybe they know things that are going to come out in the ethics hearing, and they're just trying to save poor Al from the agony. Or maybe, just maybe, maybe it's politics. Like I said, that line from Julius Caesar, Cassius has a lean and hungry look. The campaign against Al Franken was led by Senator Kirsten Gillibrand and Senator Kamala Harris of California, she of New York and Harris of California, both of whom have pretty clearly defined presidential ambitions for 2020. And both of whom would have a vested interest in making sure that, you know, one more potential challenger was gotten out of the way. Is this cynical? I suppose it is. Is it possible? More than. Because politics. Because it's a dirty business. Because it's a bare-knuckled business. And there had to be an awfully damned good reason for piling the kindling at Al Franken's feet and starting to strike matches before there had even been any kind of adjudication. See, that's the difference between there's several differences between Al Franken and Roy Moore. They don't even belong in the same sentence together, let alone the same paragraph, and you really can't compare the two. But Roy Moore was groping children. Let me repeat that. Roy Moore was groping children. And the witnesses who are now adults and came forward were thoroughly and pretty exhaustively vetted by the Washington Post before they broke the story. The Washington Post would not have broken the story had they themselves not made an editorial determination that the women were telling the truth. There has been no such vetting process, to the best of my knowledge, for the accusers of various forms of bottom-touching or unconsented-to kissing or, well, photograph-taking. I mean, we still don't even know who took the photograph with the, you know, the USO, for which Al Franken apologized profusely, even sending an apology letter. Nope, we don't. We don't know who shot the photograph. We don't know anything about the context of it. We don't know anything about the circumstances. We don't know if she was playing possum and in on the gig or the gag or not. Because none of this has been adduced in any sort of tribunal. And there really hasn't been a thorough vetting process by anyone who brought it forward. And let's remember, the initial allegation was done at the connivance of America's biggest rat fucker, Roger Stone, who said before it happened, now comes Al Franken's time in the barrel. As in, like, you know, this is going to be like shooting fish in a barrel. I guess maybe I should have been a little bit more savvy, and I should have realized that the people doing the shooting into the barrel would be Democrats, that the Republicans wouldn't even have to do it, that the Democrats would do it for them. Once again, I remind everyone within the sound of my voice of the pronouncement made, yea, verily, maybe more than 80 years ago by a man by the name of Will Rogers, who said, I am not a member of an organized political party. I am a Democrat. There we go. Plain and simple. Silent R. Lamar says, step down below trial. Bullshit. These people are skip it. Question, do they think Chinless Mitch will seat the Dem if one is picked? I don't know. I don't know. On the subject of Al Franken, James writes, aren't all of his accusers Republicans? Yeah, I don't know if we can say that about all of them, but I think we can say that about a majority of them. Marty says, I don't know about Gillibrand, but as I said before, I will not support Harris until I get a good answer for her not prosecuting Steve Mnuchin and then taking money from him for her senatorial campaign. I don't care if you think I'm some sparkle fart pony person. I don't. You're perfectly well within your rights. Now, where I will draw the line is if you insist on using gender-based vituperatives to describe her. You'll notice I've been critical of this process so far, and I haven't called anybody anything. Because this is too important for that sort of juvenile hogwash. The same cannot be said for everyone. So just to, I'm acting as though everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about, and that's a mistake on my part. One should not do that. But let me start by sharing something with you that I saw, again, that was posted by our friend Joy. It's a memo from, I don't know if it's Facebook or Twitter. To Senator Gillibrand, until you call for the resignation of Mango Unchained, you need to lay off Franken. There was an account on Twitter, 10_GOP, that asked for women to say Franken had groped them, didn't have to be true. That account is now suspended. Democrats need to stop doing the Republicans' dirty work. And instead of asking how high when the GOP says jump, please stand up for other Democrats. You conflating Al Franken to Roy Moore is a big part of the problem. Next you'll go all in on the tax bill just so you appear fair. Stop it. Just stop it. And this is attributed to one Jan Walsh in Parrish, New York. Well, hung like Jesus says, Bob, I love to say I told you so. Franken's done. Well, he's not done. As far as I can tell, he's not done by anything he did. He is done by the actions of others. I mean, this is serious. Oh, and by the way, if these Democrats think that this is going to get them anything in 2018 or 20, they are simpler than I ever thought them to be, and I thought them to be pretty simple. This isn't going to matter a hill of beans in 2018 or 2020. Because there will be more than enough Citizens United money to drown out every last bit of gee, look at us, how we police our own ism. And as I mentioned last night, by the way, while the Senate will be deprived of Al Franken's vote, he's got an announcement scheduled for tomorrow. I fully expect him to announce he's resigning. It was interesting that Amy Klobuchar, the senior senator from Minnesota, Amy Klobuchar did not join in the original hallelujah chorus of women and a few men calling for Franken's resignation. However, later in the day, she issued a statement saying, "I've spoken with Senator Franken, and I'm sure he'll do the right thing," which means, in this context, throw himself upon his sword. You know what? Maybe he did all these things. Maybe there are things that are even worse. I don't know. Maybe we'll find that out. Maybe they'll keep hammering away even after he resigns. I don't know. Or maybe they'll move on to somebody else. It's hard to say. But again, as I mentioned last night, Joe Barton, over in the House of Representatives, Joe Barton is still there. Now, this man sent one of the more disgusting naked pictures I have ever seen in my life. And he sent it to a woman that he was having sex with who wasn't his traditional, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Christian, family values wife. Now, in fact, it was while he was estranged from his second wife. Am I criticizing people for getting divorced? No, I'm not. I am, however, calling out the hypocrisy of claiming family values when you're sending really nasty pictures of your big, pasty, old self sitting there working the gherkin and sending messages along with it, say, "Baby, I'm so hot and hard for you." Yeah, that. Scott and Punky noting, I just look at them and sigh. It's an old and reliable magician's trick, misdirection. While we're mesmerized by the sound and the fury and the sound and the fury of righteousness, Republicans and some useful idiot Democrats, other and obviously more dangerous stuff is going on, case in point. The private spy group that Trump is thinking of having. Hung like Jesus, noting the whole Republican Party is a big dumb bull in the China shop of hypocrisy. I don't think there's anything dumb about them. I think they understand the nature of realpolitik, and I think they play it pretty damned well. They play chess while we play checkers on the same board, and we lose, 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 lose. But we've got values, the real ones, not the Christian kind. Yes. It's wonderful. But I should note that I've got the Horn Gulfstream fired up and ready to go at a moment's notice. I may have to just dash right out of the studio here and jump in it and fly off to Washington, D.C., because I want to be in that number. You know, that line from when the Saints go marching in. Oh, I want to be in that number. Yeah, I know, I can't carry a tune in a bucket. I want to be in that number. when Kirsten Gillibrand and Kamala Harris and Mazie Hirono and Maggie Hassan and the rest of them all go marching boldly over to Clarence Thomas's house and say, "Now see here, Clarence, you gotta go. You gotta resign. We're calling on you to resign right now." And the only thing that'll be heard from inside the Thomas household is, "Ha ha 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 ha." Yeah. And then after they are soundly and roundly laughed off the premises of the Thomas property, they can march right down to the White House with their ideological purity, and they can stand outside the White House and they can say, "Donald Trump, you have to resign, for you are a pervy, nasty, filthy, rotten, stinking, sexual harassing pig." You hear that silence? Well, in the White House, it'll be punctuated by, "Take it off, melanoma." Wait a minute, that sounded like either Ronald Reagan or Clint Eastwood. You get the point. Yeah. So, no, not all of Al Franken's accusers are Republicans. Marty points out, one of the latest accusers is one Tina Dupuy of The Nation magazine. She was formerly the comms director for Congressman Alan Grayson and claims that he kissed her and said, "It's my right as an entertainer." If you can imagine Al Franken saying, "It's my right as an entertainer," well, you got a better imagination than I do. Les with a good question. Can we get rich people on the left to pool their money together and convince the turtle to switch parties to teach these kitty cat Dems how to effectively politic? He's been kicking our asses since forever. Well, you wouldn't want him, but I understand. But there are layers within, there are circles within circles, etc. This is an onion. Because all of this, because I said earlier, this is politics. All of this is geared toward being able to say, "Hi, America, we're the Democrats. We're the people that will that will slit the throats of our own in order to show you just how serious we are about..." And so will you please give us a majority in the Senate this year? And America's going to laugh and laugh and laugh. Because they're going to say, "Hey, look, if you'll turn on each other like this, why should we ever give you power?" I mean, this is realpolitik. And I mentioned Joe Barton. Yeah, Joe Barton said over in the House, Joe Barton said, "You know, I've decided I'm just going to retire at the end of my term. Won't run for re-election." But you know what's going to happen between now and the end of his term? He's going to remain the chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee. Huh? And he's going to remain a reliable, available, predictable vote in any vote counting that Paul Ryan has to do. Then there's Blake Farenthold. And Paul Ryan never uttered a peep. He didn't say, "Now see here, Joe Barton, the Republican Party stands for family values, and we cannot tolerate you sending nasty dick pics around the interweb tubes, you..." Not a word. Then there's Blake Farenthold. We've talked about him, too. $84,000 he cost us. Every single American, $84,000. And he cost us that because he perved all over his communications director. And that was what the payoff was for his perviness. his skeeviness, his sleaziness. Now, the latest on Blake Fahrenthold said, well, I will pay back the people of the United States the $84,000. I sure will. Hey, maybe I wonder if they got some money laying around over to the Heritage Foundation they could donate me so that I could get right. I don't give a shit about him paying anything back. I want him gone. But Paul Ryan won't say he's got to go. And so up until his reelection time, and you know, who knows if he's going to run or not, he will remain an available, predictable, reliable Republican vote. Are you beginning to see how this all works? Are you beginning to? Of course you are. Why am I asking rhetorical questions like this? This is politics. Now, over in the Senate, it's a different kind of math. I mean, arguably, Paul Ryan could say, you both of you, you're out of here. Get out of here. Go. Get. Filthy, nasty, perverted, disgusting, sick. He could do that. And it wouldn't affect him. It wouldn't change the outcome of a single vote going down in the House. Because Paul Ryan has a reliable, sizable majority. In the Senate, however, it's a different story. Over there, you've got a much narrower Republican majority. There have been cases where Mike Pencilneck Geek has had to wander in and cast the deciding vote, 51-50. Tiebreaker. That's what the vice president gets to do, you know. So, Chinless Mitch can't afford too many defections. And lest we forget, the tax scam is presently in conference committee. And whatever comes out of it will have to be voted on in both the House and the Senate, unless one or the other's bill is simply adopted in whole. So we may safely wager that there will have to be a vote in the Senate. And it may contain things from the House up with which a couple of Republican senators will not put. And that would mean possibilities of defection, possible no votes. Well, a couple of no votes, three to be precise, and even Mike Pencilneck Geek can't save the day. If it should happen by, say, December 12th, that Doug Jones wins in Alabama, then that calculus changes by one. If it happens that Al Franken is still there, then the number of defectors is effectively reduced. But if Al Franken's gone, if the seat's vacant for however long it takes, unless they've already got somebody waiting in the wings, in which case this is going to seem like a very, very, very stage-managed, faked-up, frauded-up, rubed-up, dummied-up, ginned-up, hustled-up process, well, the bottom line is, it's going to make things rather complicated. And it's possible that the tax scam might not even be able to survive a simple majority vote in the Senate. You see how high the stakes are for the Republicans? Do you see now why it might have been to their benefit not to just... I mean, look, if somebody had gone after Joe Donnelly of Indiana or Joe Manchin, it wouldn't have made much difference. But Al Franken was sitting there, he flayed the skin off of Jeff Sessions and effectively put Jeff Sessions into the zone of interest of Robert Mueller. He needed to go. McConnell could not be happier to see this happening. The entire GOP is laughing up their sleeves right now. And they're not even laughing up their sleeves, they're laughing out loud. Watching, just watching the Democrats eat their own. Yeah. But with Al Franken gone, it sure makes the, and McConnell will take whatever cushion he can get. And consequently, I remain deeply suspicious of this process. And, well, maybe that'll upset people. If it does, I apologize. But I don't get behind this microphone with the primary intention of entertaining. For 12 years, we've tried to have a conversation here. And I've tried to pretty fearlessly speak my mind. And this is, you know, what I'm about to say is pretty damn difficult. But one thing that cannot be said to me, because I've already seen it in use, well, not to me personally, but it got me thinking about it. Well, you know, anybody who dismisses what Al Franken did just doesn't understand the harm that comes from sexual abuse. Oh, but I do. I so do. And this has been deeply on my mind as this issue has unfolded. See, starting when I was about 4.5 years old, I was raped. I was raped a lot. It's a complicated story, and maybe it's a little too hillbilly gothic, but it's a fact. I had a stepbrother. He was several years older than me. About 8 years older. As it turns out, he wasn't even my father's son. The woman my father had been married to previously had gotten pregnant by another man because it turned out that she was actually a sex worker while my dad was at work. These are not. I mean, it's just fact. Dad would go off to work, and the light would go on in the window, and she'd be open for business. And when my stepbrother was born, he had to have a blood transfusion. Problem was, neither my father nor the mother could provide blood of the type necessary to provide the transfusion. Didn't look like Dad either. Didn't look like his mother. He was a deeply troubled young man, and starting when I was about 4.5 years old, he raped me. He raped me a lot. He raped me and kept on raping me until he died in June of 1971 of an accidental gunshot wound to his head. So I know a little bit about sexual abuse, and I know a little bit more about sexual abuse than having somebody just put their hand on my bottom. And I've given a lot of thought to whether or not I should mention this, but, well, horse is out of the barn. And I won't tell you that I got over it. I will tell you that it constituted the outright theft of my childhood, and that whether I was thinking about it or not thinking about it, it constantly informed everything I did. It twisted my idea of sexuality before, you know, at the age of 4 and a half, I even knew what sexuality was. I'm not going to sit here and break down in tears or anything. This isn't fucking therapy. But I just wanted, I did want to make it clear that it's not like I'm offering an opinion here without some sense of what's going on. I ache for anyone who's ever been through anything even remotely similar to what I went through. A lot. One of the last things I ever said to my stepbrother, you know, he didn't just rape me. He beat the living hell out of me every chance that he got. I don't know if it made him feel better or what. But one afternoon, he was beating me with a tree limb. And 4, 5, 6-year-old kids don't have a lot of available alternatives. Gee, Bob, why didn't you tell your mommy and daddy? Are you kidding? He said he'd kill me. But he was beating me with a tree limb. And all I could do was look at him and through the river of tears that were running down my face, scream, "I hope you die." And a few months later, I don't know what the exact amount of time was, he did. Now, again, we're talking about a little kid. 1971. I was 8 by then. It's a bit too much to expect of an 8-year-old that they would be so psychologically strong that they wouldn't look and say, "Well, you know, I said I hoped he died, and then he died, so, yeah, no, I didn't have anything to do with that. That was just coincidence." And you never say anything to anybody. Ever. Through all the years of your growing up, not a word. And so nobody can tell you, "Hey, it wasn't your fault he died. You didn't wish that upon him. You didn't cause that." Can't tell anybody. And the things you remember. The first time it happened, it was summer. I know this because my father was at work. We had one car. He had the car at work. My mother was mowing the grass. I know because all these years later, I can still hear the lawnmower in my mind. I can still see the lawnmower. I know what color it was. I can still see the plastic housing around the engine. I can smell the combination of exhaust and fresh cut grass as the odor is pulled in by the air conditioner and circulated through the house. And I can see him. And I can hear him. And that was the first time. And I can see and hear a whole lot of other times, too. My father probably would have murdered him had he known. My mother might never have stopped crying. So it seemed to a child's mind that it was probably best that I kept it to myself. But it never really goes away. You know, just this past summer, I got to go through my hometown. And I did what I always do. I stopped to see the graves of my mother and father. But I can't stop to see the graves of my mother and father without seeing his grave sitting there right next to him. He was in the dirt before they ever were. But I can't even go and visit the graves of my parents without having to cope with all of what I've just told you and a hell of a lot more. So much more. And as a guy gets older, he thinks about, you know, what he wants done with his mortal remains. And whenever that time comes, I know one thing for sure. I won't be in the dirt next to my mom and dad. Because he's got the only place. And please, this is not some sort of confessional. But I sensed real danger. Today. And I guess, even though it's just terribly, terribly, terribly funny to right-wingers and white-wingers and booger-eaters and Republicans and Trump pansies and maggots, to use the term, but I got triggered all over the place today. Because I've got a sneaking suspicion there's something being done to a fairly decent human being that doesn't even rise to anything resembling what I dealt with or what was done to me. And of all the things I've done and all the things I've seen and all the places I've been, and I've forgotten a bunch of them. But I'll never forget that June afternoon that the phone rang, and I'm 8 years old, and I was all proud because I was allowed to answer the phone for the home, for the family. And I picked up the phone and I answered it. And there was a deeply southern voice on the other end of the line that said, "Son, is your daddy home?" Gave my father's name, and I said, no, sir, he's at work. May I take a message? He said, "Is your mama home?" I said, "Yes, sir." He'd given his name, and I looked at my mother and had put my hand over the mouthpiece, and I said, "Mama, it's Detective Nykirk from the Atlanta Police Department. I don't know what he wants." And at the time, my brother was missing. I never called him my stepbrother. He was my brother. He was missing because he'd run away from home for the second time. And my mother knew it wasn't going to be a good thing. She just didn't know how bad. And she took the phone and she identified herself. And then, from my perspective, I watched all the blood drain out of her face. I watched her begin to shake. I watched the tears begin to roll out of her eyes. She never screamed. She never cried out. Tough that way. But she put her hand over the mouthpiece and said, "Go get Dr. John." Dr. John was a science professor who lived two doors up from us. And I took off out the door and I ran up and I knocked on the door and he came. He's a fine, fine fella, brilliant man. And I said, "Dr. John, Mama wants you to come to the house and come quick." And so he knew, you know, my mother was not prone to fits of histrionics or anything. So he came on the double quick. And he stayed there until my dad could get home. Kind of had a standing rule in the house. My mother never called my father at work. I mean, ever. But she had a number in case of emergencies, and she called and she said, "Tell him to get home right now. Don't waste any time." They were remarkable people in their way. Because my dad didn't turn around and call her back and say what's wrong. He knew that if she said get home right quick, that there wasn't any time to waste on the phone, so he got home right quick. And then the news came out. And I knew he was dead, my brother. Dad, meantime, had called one of his closest comrades at work on the furnace. And he and his wife came over, and their job was to get me somewhere else while the details were attended to and learned of. So I don't know what was going on, but people somehow or another began showing up at the house. I don't know how it is in the rest of the country, but there's some sort of network in the South that when there's a death in the family, people just know to show up with food. And I mean, it was like, you know, by the time I got back a couple of hours later, there was a table full of food. And not a damn bit of it store-bought. Now, my dad's friend, he and his wife took me downtown to a little ice cream shop that's still there and has been there since the 1900s. And they said, you can have anything you want. I didn't want much of anything. But I got an ice cream cone because I thought it would make them happy. And they asked me, did I know? And I said, yeah, I know. And the one thing out of that that part of it all is that over and over again, the woman looked at me and said, it's okay to cry. It's okay to cry. You can cry now. Everybody will know you're still a big boy even if you cry. You can cry. I couldn't cry. I was pretty sure I'd just killed my brother. I grew up. I learned. I know I didn't. But it's still there. It's still painted in vivid technicolor in my mind. I'm terrified it'll be the last thing I remember. Didn't cry then, and I haven't cried to this day. From that day to this, it's become, well, and before that, going back to when everything started, it's always been very, very difficult to cry. Maybe that got broken. Not too long after that, a couple of days tops, we had to get on the road, and I saw Atlanta, Georgia for the first time in my life. And it's not like there was a sitter or anything. So I went where my parents went. And they tried to shield me. But that's another one of those things that's just going to stay for a while, I reckon. For as long as I'm me. There was a Polaroid photo they took of my brother. He's laying on a gurney, the kind that you have in an ambulance. And his eyes are wide. And his head's tilted to one side. And his brains are coming out. I saw that. I sure did. I sure did. And anybody who's been through anything like that, and frankly, the number of Americans who have been through something like that is shockingly high. Knows that there are after effects. It's like there's an earthquake and then there are aftershocks. Some people become suicidal. Some people self-medicate. I probably self-medicated. But it rocks every aspect of your being. And you think about it a lot. I've never stopped thinking about it. You know, the stuff that you really can't answer, why? And it leads you down through various tunnels of inquiry. I think something similar was probably done to my brother. Looking back on the family history, or the history of my family after they moved to Alabama, well, he was a troubled kid in the first place because his mother had walked out on him and his two sisters. Didn't have any interest in them whatsoever, just bugged out, split, gone. Ran off with one of her Johns. He was the youngest. He probably took it the hardest. But when my dad moved his family down to Alabama, he tried everything he knew how to do to make sure that they had something like a good, normal, middle-class existence. And he was going to do it if it broke him. So there were photographs of my brother in his Little League uniform and his Cub Scout uniform. And then all of a sudden, that all ended. And in many ways, my family was very good at not talking about things that, you know, didn't need to be talked. But my brother started having problems long about 7th and 8th grade. Just a little bit before he started doing to me what he did. His grades, which had been okay, went through the floor. Started wetting the bed. So you can, and then, you know, later on in life, I find myself in a position to be dealing with these sorts of things on an almost daily basis. And there were times that I would get to the end of my workday, and I would be shaking like a leaf in the wind because of what I'd seen and what I'd heard. And that's where I learned about things like acting out and the behaviors that, and it took me, I'm not kidding you, it took me up until this last summer to start putting some of those puzzle pieces together and recognizing the acting out. I've always been interested in details. And after he died, I remember going into his bedroom. He had a bedroom of his own. And, you know, early 70s, there was one of those little portable record players. What's a record player? And he had left a 45 disc, a 45 on it. And I read the title, and I set the needle down, and I listened to it, and it was a song. And the refrain was just, "I'm so lonely, I'm Mr. Lonely." And he had been listening to that before he slipped out in the night and ran off with another kid, a ne'er-do-well, and made his way to friends of theirs in a little community, a little suburb of Atlanta called Sandy Springs. I could probably go on for the next 2 hours about all of this. I won't. I won't subject you to it. But this has been, ever since the Weinstein stuff broke, this has been eating at me. Getting on Twitter and seeing all those Me Too hashtags. And just feeling like I really didn't want to become part of that milieu. Because you can say Me Too, but the fact of the matter is, nobody can really know exactly what it was that any particular person who has been victimized in such fashion has gone through. So when I say that I am bothered, that a man who appeared to be a very, very good senator, very good at the whole senatoring business, has been set up for crucifixion, I just wanted to make sure that everybody understood that I know what real, live, honest to God, no kidding, sexual assault and sexual abuse is. And my cynical sense tells me that what happened today has very little to do with what Al Franken did or didn't do, and everything in the world to do with the ambitions of some politicians. And not very particularly savvy ones at that, allowing themselves, whatever their ambitions may be, to be used by the most cynical of politicians, people like Mitch McConnell. Oh, and by the way, all those people up on their moral high ground saying, well, you know, we're better than them. See, we're taking care of our problem. We're cleaning house. And if Roy Moore gets elected to the Senate, he's sure gonna have a welcome waiting for him. What, is Kirsten Gillibrand gonna not speak to him or something? Is Kamala Harris not gonna speak to him or something? I don't think that's going to be particularly troublesome or troubling to Roy Moore if he gets elected. Oh, but Bob, what about the Ethics Committee? Well, Jesus, there was an Ethics Committee proceeding regarding Senator Franken, and they're not even going to be allowed to commit. Gillibrand and Harris et al. Couldn't even wait for that body to do its work. Had to go now! Damn it, now! Quickly! Stat! And there won't be an ethics committee proceeding against Roy Moore if he's elected to the Senate of the United States. There will not be one. If the returns come in a week from last night and say that Roy Moore is the winner, then you can bet your last damn dollar that Mitch McConnell will then say, the people of Alabama have spoken at the ballot box. And that'll be the end of it. And the Democrats can hoot and holler till the cows come home, and it won't make a hill of beans worth a difference in 2018 or 2020. Because there's all, like I said, all kinds of Citizens United money out there that will drown their voices. So there is other stuff to talk about on this prayer meeting Wednesday. Maybe we'll get to them. And if you want to talk about issues like this, you're fine. That's fine. You can. I'm not going to solicit that. This isn't psychology radio. And I am not competent to practice psychology. And you know, I hope in sharing all this that I haven't overshared. I'm getting some emails, And I thank you for your kind words, Darlene, Glenn, others. Glenn says, it's really hard to listen to what you're saying. It's all too real for me. I suspect it's all too real for a lot of people, and maybe a lot of people inside this little community. And if this is proven triggering or anything like that, I apologize. But for a lot of weeks now, I've been feeling like I was sitting on a powder keg. Not that I wanted to jump in and say, yeah, me too. But my opinions on these issues are driven, as they must be, by my own experience. We human beings evolve, and experience is the engine of that evolution. So with that having been said, I'll leave it be. I mean, like I said, I could go on for 2 hours, but nobody wants to listen to that. It becomes a little bit too self-serving. Yeah, 35 or 40 minutes or whatever it's been is plenty. Because in the end, I'm more than what happened to me. I'm a lot more than what happened to me. Some of my flaws through life, I think, can probably be traced back to it, but they don't excuse them. But as the saying goes, everything is part of it. So when I get a little worked up about, say, firearm deaths, handgun deaths, there's a reason. And if I'm particularly disgusted and infuriated by child sexual abuse, there's a reason. And if I think there's a great big goddamn difference between sexual assault, sexual abuse, and other lesser things, there's a reason for that too. Glenn says, no need to apologize. You brought things to light that many find hard to listen to. However, it seems as though the conservatives are making a mockery of it, lessening its value. Yeah. Well, there's look, if we're talking about Republicans, there is nothing they will not devalue, if in so doing it can preserve their access to power and their access to money. Because, see, that's who they are. And there's nothing that isn't for sale to a hyper-anarcho-capitalist. There's nothing that cannot be money-valued and capitalized. The rat-fucking of Al Franken didn't happen just because it would be fun to do. There was some determination of value in it when they first connived at bringing the first accuser forward. There was value. Power in politics is the coin of the realm. And we have seen it on bold display today. So, let's take a little break. Reboot. If you've got something you want to talk about, you're welcome to. You know how to reach the program, 304-574-8178. Via Skype, Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet, Bob Kincaid Horn. BobKincaidHorn. Email, BobKincaid@gmail.com. At Bob Kincaid on Twitter, Bob Kincaid on Facebook. A pattern, as I have said in the past, emerges. If not, we'll move on to other things. Like, say, the deliberate attempt on the part of the President of the United States to pour gasoline onto a fire in the Middle East, which he did today. Turning into a roulette wheel just where the world's going to blow up first. North Korea, Middle East, Russia, Venezuela, who knows? This is listener-supported conversation radio, and yes, through all of that, I still note that we got $80 to go fundraising for the evening, 8 at 10, 10 at 8, 1 at 80, 2 at 40, 4 at 20, etc. Sorry. I enjoyed those two fundraising free days, didn't you? But this is the Horn, and I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep. You can't hang around. Our house in the middle of our street. Our house in the middle of our house. It has a crowd. There's always something happening, and it's usually quite loud. Our mum, she's so house proud. Nothing ever slows her down, and a mess is not allowed. Our house, in the middle of our street. Our house, in the middle of our street. Our house, in the middle of our street.
Something tells you that you've got to move
in the middle of our.
Father gets up late for work. Mother has to iron his shirt. Then she sends the kids to school. Sees them off with a small kiss. She's the one they're going to miss in lots of ways.
Our castle and
Thankfully, I've kind of rebooted from the first hour, and we can I can turn our attention to other things. Let's see. Let me. Let me just check a couple of messages here real quick. Thanks. Those are kind words, Silent R. Lamar. Thank you. And thanks to Hung Like Jesus, too. Oh, let's see. What do we... It's a little difficult to turn around from that, I freely admit. But turn around we shall. The Middle East, you know, the Jerusalem declaration today is probably the real biggest and most consequential news. And, you know, it's got the potential to be a real horror. This is the sort of thing that make people want to fly, you know, planes into buildings. And for all we know, will. The conventional wisdom all day long has been that it'll all be, well, it won't be all better, but it'll take 3 or 4 years to actually move the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. I guess. But it's got a kind of an apocalyptic feeling to it, doesn't it? And let's be clear, that's no accident. This was red meat. This was red meat for the evangelicals, whom, of course, we focus on prayer meeting Wednesday. It is plain and simple a dog whistle to the right. Because as we have discussed on this program time after time after time, among other things, the evangelicals are all... you know, they're all constantly just looking for that combination of magic events that will make Jesus come down out of the clouds in his holy rolls and land smack dab in Jerusalem and find him some good evangelicals and say, all you Jews better acknowledge me as God, and if you don't, you know, put you to the sword. And it's that putting the Jews to the sword thing part that gets the evangelicals all hopped up and excited. Thanks, Arthur. Don't worry, Bob. Trump will start the revolution. Isn't it wonderful? Susan Sarandon. Arthur says, and I like her despite the silliness. She's a good actor. No doubt about it. But this has been a fetish object, the Jerusalem thing, for the evangelical fundamentalists, for a very, very long time. I mean, the Southern Baptists are all worked up. The Pentecostals are they'd be excited if they weren't busy rolling on the floor and pouring oil on each other and speaking in tongues and handling snakes in celebration, mind you. because, see, once you go down that rabbit hole, there's all kinds of little magic things that have to happen at some point in time. Somebody, and you know, somebody like our buddy Will in Chicago could be helpful here, because this is all stuff that's been co-opted from Jewish messianic thought. But there's got to be a whole set of table service or whatever for temple ceremonies, and somebody's got to breed a pure red heifer. But the first thing that has to happen is Jerusalem has to be the capital of Israel. And then somebody's going to have to do something about the Dome of the Rock, because they also have to rebuild the temple, you know, the Jewish temple. And then then the hardware comes in, the pure red heifer gets slaughtered, and next thing you know, well, looky, there's cousin Jesus. Stephen, New York asks, am I too cynical to think the timing of the Jerusalem announcement is related to the Alabama election? Oh, no, I don't think that's cynical at all. Everything helps. And this will get them worked up. I mean, this means that this Sunday, all the bulletin boards for all the evangelical churches all over Alabama can say, sermon this week, the end times is here. Come on in. Learn about it. Make sure you're saved and right with God so you can fly off into the clouds. And then when everybody wanders in, you can start telling them about how it's critical that they go out and vote for that good and decent man, Roy Moore, who, like Jesus, has been falsely accused. Only problem is, Jesus wasn't falsely accused. He did everything they said he did. The question was, did he deserve to be murdered for it? So, you know, that. So, and in the meantime, this has pissed everybody off. Every ally we have, Muslim and Christian alike, has pissed them off. Even loopy old Bibi remained uncharacteristically silent about it. Because, see, psychotic old Bibi knows that this is going to make Israel go boom some more. Of course, it's got an upside, because that's going to mean that he's going to get to, order some more guided missile attacks and white phosphorus attacks and things like that on Gaza and the West Bank. And that's always good for a vote or two among the Likudniks. Erdogan, who's supposed to be Trump's bosom buddy, you know, Turkey, the guy whose bodyguards, his thugs, beat up American citizens in Washington, D.C. Yeah, he says it's not a good idea. France doesn't like it. The U.K. doesn't like it. Maybe I missed it. Did the Saudis say anything? Because, see, Jared and the Saudi crown prince, who's been running a little purge of his own over there, well, they're BFFs now. But I can't imagine that the Saudis are too down with this. This will drive the Iranians bananas. It'll drive ISIS up a wall. People who were formerly moderate or not particularly interested will be deeply aggrieved now, because Jerusalem's a holy city to Christians, Muslims, and Jews. Canaanites, too, but, well, they kind of got genocided. But lots of people have found that particular piece of real estate to be sacred. Really, the only thing you could do in terms of world peace with that would be to have an agreement on the part of the entire planet that whole city was going to be off-limits to anybody's government and off-limits to anybody's country, and everybody would have free access to it. And nobody got to blow up any temples or churches or anything else. And that probably still wouldn't work. but this will, this'll, the Palestinians declared 3 days of rage. Can't hardly blame them. And it won't end well. Whatever they give, whatever they dish out, they will get back a hundredfold. What a world, what a world, what a world, what a world. And, you know, lots of other stuff, too. Before I go to the phones, one quick thing. There was a... Arthur asks, is Bibi a European Jew or a Semitic Jew? Real question. And does that mean he's entitled by God to live in the Holy Land? He's an American guy is what he is. Really. And, I mean, you know, I can't remember who's who, the Ashkenazi and the Sephardim. Are the Ashkenazi the ones who went in, the European Jew? Yeah, that. Well, heck with it. Let's run over to Skype and check in with Scott and Punky. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob or Rebop.
You better have a movie review.
Well, you know, I was not going to call, but your Bobathon at the top of the show kind of enlisted me in getting into that part of the conversation, if it's all right.
Sure.
But I've got a newsworthy, noteworthy observation or two that I'd like to share, since you're on the topic of Jerusalem as the site of the Jewish capital and the American embassy, maybe. And when I heard the news, my thoughts went to two evangelical types. One was Pastor John Hagee.
Starve!
Who is a Christian Zionist, among other things.
Yeah, he's the founder of Queefy.
Yeah. And you can't beat that name. I don't, isn't a...
Goddess of Irony just
owns
him.
Word?
Citizens United for Israel. Queefy.
Yeah, but queef, isn't that... What is that slang for? Or isn't that...
I think everybody knows.
It's not exactly Santorum in the dirty Google terminology, but it seems to me to be along those lines. But I won't go there. Needless to say, my thoughts went immediately to Pastor John Hagee, and you've got to know that every ounce of him, every cubic centimeter of him, was just... Well, he was as ecstatic. His little heart, his overworked little heart, was pounding like a zebra tap dancing on a fresh plate of lemon jello over the news. You know he's got to be a happy camper. And the other person who came immediately to mind was Hal, the late great Planet Earth Lindsay, who has been predicting a madness and mayhem for that region of the world since Nixon's first term, as I recall. Okay,
and whenever something happens, you see, I was right.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the problem with poor Mr. Lindsay, Hal Lindsay. He's been wrong so many times. In the wake of the late great Planet Earth, which I think was published in 69 or 70. If memory serves me, because I was one of the faithful who lined up to buy it, you know, because it was just the latest and greatest in Bible prophecy.
Right,
so-called.
And it was followed by the sequel, No, Really, The Late Great Planet Earth, and the sequel to the sequel, I'm not kidding this time, the planet Earth is really late and great.
Well, I used to own a number of not only the original book, but a number of those make goods that he had published in subsequent years. Usually about every 3 or 4 years he'd
My grandmother had the whole set.
Yeah. He would revise his estimates. And even with the news today, he's still not going to be right. You know, he will tell you up and down and sideways that the folks in Gog and Magog are just, they're like the bulls and bears dancing on Wall Street, you know, with Pastor John Hagee calling the tune, you know, with a band of fiddlers by his side. Okay, they just couldn't be happier. Meanwhile, as you say, the folks who are currently living in and around that challenged real estate, they're thinking, oh shit, things were kind of calm, relatively calm, but it ain't going to stay that way for long, you know. But it's just the latest example of Trump's the latest example of Trump's irretrievable stupidity. And again, it goes back to what I mentioned in my email. It goes back to that old faithful magician's trick, misdirection. You confuse them by flourishes with the left hand while the right hand is doing, you know, pulling the rabbit out of the hat, you know, doing the mechanical things that make it look like that's what's happened. And you can take it from an old, you know, a former kid magician. It's nothing more than misdirection, because as the heat gets turned up on Trump and his cronies, they will try everything they can possibly try to have the focus go elsewhere, you know. But anyway, that's...
Oh, and I mean, I've got an old and dear friend who is a real live, honest to goodness, no kidding, professional magician, and he'll tell you the same thing. It's all about...
Yeah.
It's about confirmation bias and perception management.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Misdirection and sleight of hand are the two tricks that magicians have relied on for centuries to impress, you know, the geekers and the gawkers out there in the audience, seemingly mystifying them, you know. But meanwhile, it's nothing more than a trick, an illusion. But anyway, that's my comment on the news. As we used to say in the forum, in relation to your Bobathon at the top of the show, thank you for sharing. I was in the kitchen cleaning up, getting ready to do the cooking for tonight, and as you were sharing so honestly and you know, some terribly painful stuff, it resonated with me. Because as happy-go-lucky as I might come across, you know, I have not similar, well, some similar, some parallel demons in my closet. And I guess what saved my ass, because it could have gone south in a big hurry. You talk about the accidental shooting of your brother. There was a time, believe it or not, As an adolescent, a young adolescent, I got access to a pistol, and I was in so much rage and pain that I even plotted out the massacre of my family, followed in rapid succession by my, you know, including myself in the number. And I won't even say it was the grace of God that spared me that fate. I'll tell you exactly what it was. Around that age, and even before that age, I had got interested in radio. Radio fascinated me. And I knew from a fairly young age that I would grow up and do that work for some length of time. And I will swear to my dying day that it was only the hope of that eventual future that dissuaded me from doing something tragic and horrible and awful. And I'm not going to go into a bunch of details, but, you know, I just, and I didn't talk about it in the news when it was in the news more recently, this Me Too thing, but I've, something about that has bothered me. And I get that the Me Too thing, the trend, is doing some good. But I'm troubled by and sad at the shorthand of it. And I get that it could be a healthy first step involving honesty and courage. But I question if there's going to be a lot of lasting therapeutic benefit arising out of what shows up for me as engaging in sloganeering of a pop culture sort. And it probably, to some people, makes me sound uncompassionate, and maybe I am, but I see a bigger picture, and that is to invite people not to simply stay stuck in their story, because all that serves to do is support somebody in remaining them as told by whatever it was that happened to them. And that appears to me to be self-definition or identification that's almost as bad as the original abuse itself. It could even be seen as another form of victimization, you know. But I don't get that that's what you've engaged in. I get that you're managing somehow, and God knows how, to be healthily informed and served by whatever the events were.
I'm not served by it.
Sure you are.
Trust me, it didn't do me a damn bit of good.
It did you enough good to know that that's what occurred and to not stay stuck there, to somehow work your way past it to whatever extent that's possible.
Oh, well, that's, you know, I mean, that's kind of Nietzschean, really. That's whatever does not kill us makes us stronger.
Well, yeah, maybe that's part of it.
And you know, I'm telling this on December the 6th, 2017. I've alluded to it in the past, but never in its full detail. And I made damn sure that my mother and my father were both dead before I even began to try to acknowledge it.
Well, that answers another question in the back of my mind. As you were telling it, I wondered if you ever made them aware of what the hell was going on.
No, because, you know, I joke about that line from Mate One: "All we got in common is our misery, so the least we can do is share it." There would have been not a damn thing served by doling out a great big dollop of my own anguish and misery and hurt and pain to the two people who loved me more than any human than anybody else on planet Earth.
Yeah, I get that. And I know that there'll never be a time machine invented that actually works the way it works in movies and fiction and stuff. And maybe it's better that such a thing doesn't come to pass. What troubles me is the fact that I didn't really start getting my head around my past until somewhat long after both of my parents were dead. And maybe it wouldn't serve anybody's good to have confronted them on what was going on with me and the fate that damn nearly befell them. I don't think they ever put it together, to tell you the truth. I mean, on some level, they may have had some inkling, but they never heard from me about how I felt about what the hell was going on. And maybe it's better to let those sleeping dogs continue to lie.
Well, but, you know, I can sit here and make excuses all night long, but like I said, I will stand by the idea that it didn't do me a damn bit of good. because most I can point at most of the major screw ups in my life, and I can at least wonder if that didn't play some role in it.
Oh, I don't doubt that it did. You talk about acting up and acting out. I can think of a time, a long stretch of time, where I know that was true for me. I mean, on the one hand, the person's sitting here in San Diego presenting himself to you and the rest of the world via the internet. It's like I am sitting here now, the sum total of all my choices and actions and experiences. And along the way, I've done as well as I can to make them work for me as opposed to against me. And maybe that's what I was meaning, you know, in saying that what happened on in some way has served you later on down the road. In other words, we're all in process, you know, and you're just like every other person on the planet. You're in process, I'm in process, we're all in process. And we're all imperfect. And we excel. We are perfect in our imperfection, which is fun to play with. But anyway, I am heartened by your sharing, because it's out of that sharing that it's going to create a space for other people to begin to get freed up in. And that's the upside of any horrible thing that brought you and them to that place. Because that's what it's all about. It's one thing to remain stuck in it and beaten down by it. It's the rising up from it and moving forward regardless of it that makes life somewhat more workable. So anyway.
Well, I appreciate that. I do. I've sat down and tried to write about it a couple of times. I have found it damn near impossible to write about. And so, you know.
Well, I wondered about that, too, because they say that there's a book in all of us.
Oh, yeah. And well, what did Hemingway say? Writing is easy. All you have to do is sit down and bleed out a pint every day.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's about the size of it. And that's too bad because of your facility with the language. And maybe not now doesn't mean not never. I'd sure as hell buy it. And I'd be proud to plunk down the money to buy it. And if you ever did an autograph party on your book tour, I'd stand in line to have you sign it. And I would even go see the movie based on the book.
Ooh. You know, I always figured, what was his name? I always figured if I ever showed up in a movie, we'd get, and I can't, why has his name disappeared on me now? That guy, brilliant actor, died with a needle in his arm.
Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman. I always wanted Philip Seymour Hoffman to play me.
Well, you know, that's some brilliant casting.
Well, you know, he kind of cheated me out of it, though.
Yeah. One wonders what his demons were. God, one of the first thing I ever saw him in terms of movie roles was in Boogie Nights.
Oh, Boogie Nights and playing the absolutely maximally loathable preppy rich kid in Dead Poets Society. Scent of a Woman.
No, I never saw that.
Oh, I'm just getting started. Al Pacino. Yeah, I don't do a very good Al Pacino.
Yeah.
Don't you purr. That was, but he didn't do anything that he wasn't brilliant in. The film where he played Truman Capote. He was Truman Capote. But
brilliant actor, and the day he died, Jesus.
I think that's all. I mean, that's all funny though. You know, who's going to play Bob? I demand the right to play myself. You know, just like Howard Stern did in Private Parts. Damn it.
WNBC.
Yeah, that's the right. Mm-hmm.
And that that character, Pig Vomit, is based on a guy. I can't think of his name, but if you think Stern used to give him trouble, Imus used to give him even more trouble than Stern ever dreamed of. Because Imus did not suffer program directors gladly. And then you add the fact that you are dealing with the National Broadcasting Company, the radio division, and all manner of hilarity would ensue out of that. Geez. Well, anyway, I wanted to comment on the isn't that big golden domed mosque that sits up on the Temple Mount? Isn't that where Jesus is supposed to land when he?
Well, no, that's where they have to rebuild the temple. That's why I was saying they got to do something about it. And by do something about it, I mean sooner or later they're going to have to blow it up. The Muslim world, such as it is. Ain't going to take any too kindly to that.
No. Well, they've been talking about tearing that down and rebuilding the Jewish temple, the Great Temple or the Grand Temple, whatever it is, for years. And one of the big proponents of that was the late Reverend Carl McIntyre, who was based up in New Jersey, who had a radio program.
The late, great Planet McIntyre?
No. He had a radio program called the 20th Century Reformation Hour, although it was a half-hour show that was heard on religious radio stations. And he used to put on these marches down Pennsylvania Avenue concurrently with his rebuilding the temple spiel. You remember the anti-war marches on Pennsylvania Avenue?
Oh, of course.
Well, he would do his Kill a Commie for Christ pro-Vietnam War marches down Pennsylvania Avenue. And those were a sight to behold. He actually went so far as to build a scale model of the temple and was taking that around in sort of a sideshow thing. And they were trying to raise money to support some group to... you know, dynamite, you know, do the big demolition job on the mosque or whatever that thing is with the golden dome.
It's a mosque.
Oh God, yeah. But yeah, that's gonna put a crimp in their plans. The fact that the site is currently occupied by another structure, and see, that's the trouble. 98% of all the troubles throughout history can be laid at the feet of religion, whether it's Hindu, Christian, Muslim, Jewish, you know, First Church or the Gooey Death and Discount House of Worship. It doesn't matter. Powerhouse Church of the Presumptuous Assumption. I don't care what it is. Religion has done more fucking up of things than any single other cause you could care to name. And if they're going to use,
if you know your Hal Lindsey, you know that the evangelicals have had a hard on for the Dome of the Rock, for a very long time. I mean, this end times eschatological movement goes back to a wild eyed nut job in England named Darby in the middle of the 19th century maybe.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And it goes hand in hand with the with the activist movement that winds up in the Balfour Declaration. See, I don't. And look, I'm not trying to be preachy here, but I've had a fair number of Jewish friends over the years.
Some of my best friends are Jewish.
No, that's not what I'm saying. But you sit down and you talk with them about the stuff, and I don't know that much about their beliefs, and it turns out they don't know much about mine either, or what used to be mine, or what Christians think or believe. They just know that every now and then the Christians get a real hard-on for killing them, which is true. But they don't understand. One of the most fundamental things that they don't understand is that the Balfour Declaration and the partition comes out of an eschatological movement that says that we've got to send the Jews back to Israel so Jesus can come back and kill them.
Yeah.
And as somebody who doesn't want anybody killed for their religion, or doesn't really want anybody killed in particular, nonviolence and all that, you feel like you're standing on your head screaming underwater. Don't, and I mean, I remember this from several years ago. It's like, what are you people thinking? You know, you people, what are you thinking? You're getting in bed with John Hagee and Queefy? Don't you know what he wants to do to you? Because I do, and I find it terrifying. Because there's a promise that, well, you know, I mean, they're all going to, the ones that don't confess Christ, I mean, Jesus is going to look at his followers and go, you gig them. And that's real. That's not me making stuff up. I mean, I remember sermons as, you know, it's going to be a painful day that we have to kill those Jews, but if they won't confess Christ, then we're going to have to, because he's going to tell us to, and we're going to have to do what Jesus done told us.
Well,
I mean, that's real, Scott.
I know, and among the many things about the Judeo-Christian story, the history, so-called, that goes back, 6,000 years or something? The thing that I never could get my head around was that it's like, I don't know what the longest running daytime soap opera is, but it was like that magnified a zillion times with theology and bloodletting thrown in for good measure, lots of begatting and stuff. It's like, who the hell would buy into this shit? When you sit down and really look at it, it's just nonsense.
But you know, I got to give credit where credit is due.
Mm-hmm.
And that is to Pope Frank, because he didn't mince any words when this story broke. Or not, well, you know, when Trump made his announcement. And by the way, did you hear the video? Did you hear him slurring?
No, I didn't. I heard that they were going to announce it today.
I have to see if I got the audio. It was weird. He does his usual spiel. And then towards the end, he starts to do this.
What was the setting? Was it a press conference?
No, it was just in the White House. They trotted him out, and he read from a teleprompter. I'm pretty sure he was straight off the teleprompter. But toward the end, there's
sign something, and there's a big show of holding it up.
No, he just stands there and he makes the announcement. Oh. But it's the vocalization. On the other hand, Pope Frank said, "I cannot silence my deep concern over the situation that has emerged in recent days. In order to avoid adding new elements of tension to an already volatile world that is racked by so many cruel conflicts, we need to maintain the status quo of Jerusalem." But no, in answer to my previous question, the majestic, serene, noble, high, majestic graciousnesses of Saudi Arabia, they told Trump, you know, don't do this. The Egyptians said, don't do this. The Jordanians said, really, we live next door, don't do this. The EU, don't do this. France, don't do this. Germany, mach das nicht. You know, when the Germans are telling you, the Turks, don't do this. And this tells you the degree to which, or the lengths to which he will go to try to keep the evangelical weirdos in his orbit.
Well, I'm sure. Did you watch Scarborough this morning?
No, I didn't. I didn't. I had a rough night and I overslept.
Well, I caught bits and pieces of it, and among the participants this morning was Peggy Noonan and George Will, and one of them was talking about, you know, that this new pronouncement by Trump today that everybody was speaking, that it was yet to come later on in the day. It isn't that it arose out of any demand on the part of the people who are caught up in the ongoing drama of the place. No. Trump, in some announcement he made yesterday, or some comment he made yesterday, said words to the effect, well, it was something that I made as a campaign promise, so I've got to do it. Just nothing more than just a whimsical thing, another merry little way for this butthead to stir up more shit in a world that's already beside itself with craziness.
While I did not see it today, I can tell you that apparently they have gotten under the skin of Alex Jones.
Oh, the tongue lolling.
I got to run this. You'll forgive me. I'm gonna use your dime to do this. Okay.
More bug eyed than usual.
So Alex Jones lost his mind over Joe and Mika, and get the hockey puck. I mean, not that this is gonna make you angry, but if you start hooting and hollering too loud, you know the neighbors are liable to call the law. So here we go. This is too good not to.
You've just got to be one of these people to be in the power structure. Well, guess what? We don't want a power structure. We want the country to be strong and the planet to be strong, and you parasites will be removed. They're both like...
I just have to note that he is screaming at a static picture, a still photo of Joe and Mika on a monitor. He's literally screaming at a picture.
Horrible foot-long tapeworms, man. I'm telling you. Tapeworms that we've vomited out and crapped out, and they're just trying to force-feed themselves back into our lives. They're like gonorrhea or syphilis. I mean, they are just... They're like HIV. They're like cancer. They are just... You have to understand, folks, they literally want to destroy you.
Literally. Yeah, he goes through all the things they're like. How come he didn't mention Bowler? And just asking for a friend.
Okay. God, they're evil. I mean, do you realize how evil these people are? How committed? I know folks going behind the scenes, man. They are. She is so rude. And so I've talked to four different people that have been guests on the show.
Because I'm sure Alex is just a real walk in the park and. In springtime with the aroma of daisies and violets wafting about and honeysuckle and blue skies and tweeting birds to deal with, especially when he's ripping his shirt off and stuff.
And they tell me, rock stars, you name it, that behind the scenes she treats her employees like, they're just like, she just tells the people, this coffee didn't have what I wanted, I'll have you fired, you moron idiot.
Because you know that Alex just knows a whole bunch of rock stars.
And then Scarborough shakes at her. She goes, get over there. And he's, yes, ma'am. I mean, you know what? I think I'm going to make contact with some of those folks and get the full dope on you guys. I know people that have been at dinner parties with them, and it's the same. She is just so evil and so into herself, like her evil father, that she just sits there and just goes, I mean, she just, and that's the spirit. They're like from upside down world, folks. You understand? They've broken into this dimension. They want to destroy us.
You know, just like the jellyfish monkey hybrids that you can buy in Hong Kong.
Are
you still there? Okay, just checking.
Yeah. Does Alex think that they're all part of the David Icke reptilian masters?
No, they're, oh, I don't know. They're Illuminati and, you know.
Jesus.
You probably, but by the way, I got a reverse course on you, Scott. I got a note for you from Brother Deacon Asa.
Uh-oh.
Cut the bullshit, Scott. Give us the report on the Philip Seymour Hoffman movie we asked you to watch. Talk about sleight of hand. He saw what you did there.
All right. Well, like I said, I wasn't going to call. I kind of made a pledge to myself that I would wait until you know, so that I can.
So the answer is no, isn't it?
Well, yes, the answer is no. But you don't know what's going on around here, Bob. I'm not going to get into it. I'm easily sidetracked. And let's face it, even if I had watched the movie, I couldn't in good conscience, given your Bob-a-thon at the top of the hour today, it wouldn't have been seemly to engage in something as mundane as a movie review, admittedly for a fine motion picture, I'm sure. You know, so even if I'd watched the movie over the weekend, given your monologue today, your Bob-a-thon to filibobster today, that today would not have been the right day to do it. You know, maybe it might have been, but sometimes it's good to have tension, and sometimes it's good to dwell in the realm of profoundly heavy stuff. You know, because it to the extent that it can be worked through and engaged in the being with it-ness of it. That's where good stuff happens, in my estimation. And maybe that's, you know, like too new agey or too something.
Well, that's like your opinion, man.
But that I know for a fact that has been my experience. To the extent that I can be.
Don't beat yourself up. This is becoming a bit. Remember.
Okay.
remember, Earther doesn't have you watching it until March of 2018.
Well, I.
But I'm not going to remind you of the date because I don't want you rigging the game.
I know. But no. In all seriousness, Bob, the content of the first hour. Was you talk about, you know, utilizing the true value of one-to-one communication and conversation. It doesn't get any better than that, as bad for you as it was back when it was all taking place. And, you know, I can't tip my hat fast enough. And repeatedly enough to let you know the esteem that I hold you in for sharing that today.
I know, that Scott. I know I'm playing with you. All right.
Okay. Well, and I guess I'm playing too a little bit, but you know, you do important stuff, and today's a good example of it, because I don't know what the total listenership of this program is. But there have got to be at least some people who have similar experiences.
I know for a
past.
Fact there are.
Well, there you go.
And
there
I don't know.
Go.
And I don't know if I help them or hurt them. Like I said, this stuff can get pretty triggery.
Yeah, but see, it's not up to you. You what's up to you is to be the best possible Bob Kincaid that you can be, up to and including. Sharing something that is that personal and that painful and that life-altering in an honest, open, sincere, meaningful way. And after that, your responsibility goes, you don't have any responsibility. Your job, in my estimation, is to be the best possible you can be. And part of that includes sharing openly and honestly. And people will make of it what they will, just as they do with me and everybody else who participates. So,
hopefully people understand the spirit in which it was offered. Because, like I said, I was deeply disturbed by what I see happening. You know, what I saw today with the gang up on Al Franken. And I'm sorry, that's how I view it.
Well, and I think you're right to do that. I mean, I have personally met two of the people who have been in the news in this regard in recent days. Franken, several years ago, when he was still on Air America, and I guess it was in the run-up to, it was a run-up to the 08 election, okay? And he came to... He broadcast from San Diego one morning, he and the lady that used to work with him and the girl that was in when Harry Met Sally was there. Meg Ryan. And I won some contest with the local Air America affiliate, so I got to go to the meet and greet prior to the broadcast, and I met and was greeted by Mr. Franken. And then some years ago, back in Kansas City, there was the first induction ceremony for what was supposed to become the International Jazz Hall of Fame. And I don't know if it ever came to pass because I left Kansas City a couple of years later. But one of the people who was there for that was John Conyers. Okay? So when I hear this stuff about these people, I know that even with such a brief meeting of them both, there was nothing that I witnessed, anything like what's being talked about. But it troubles me that Democrats just don't get it. Here you've got somebody in the Senate who is a talented human being who is using his talents for the betterment of people and his party. And this piling on without even the first bit of an ethics committee or a fair trial or any of this seems suspect. I mean, they may know something that none of the rest of us know, but I doubt it. And who was it that said that Mitch McConnell ought to come over?
Suffice to say, he didn't place his hand upon your waist or below your waist or anything like that?
No, the morning that I met him, and it was at the butt crack of dawn, being on Pacific Coast time and everything, the worst I could accuse Franken of being was cranky at that hour of the morning. And after all, who isn't, for crying out loud? I mean, he had to come all the way out here for this thing, and I think it was one of several remotes that week, if I'm recalling correctly. You know, so I don't know. It just pisses me off how people are sometimes, up to and including me. Okay, I'm not gonna.
Well, you know, the thing about the Franken thing that bugs the hell out of me is that. Gillibrand and Harris et al. Have made this demand absent any attempt at assessing the credibility of the accusers.
Well, that's what I was getting at.
I mean, the fact of the matter is, you know, there, as I have said repeatedly, in Roy Moore's case, there's never going to be an adjudication, but the accusers were thoroughly vetted, at least by the Washington Post, and unless you're one of those people, goddamn liberal media, unless you're one of those, then you've got to afford a little bit of regard for the effort that they made, and the fact that they were sharp enough to catch that little sleaze bag who tried to infiltrate, that adds to their credibility too. They weren't just going to bite on any worm that dangled on a hook. But there has been precisely none of that with regard to Al Franken. And there is an adjudicatory process underway. But Kirsten Gillibrand, who really wants to be president in 2020, and Kamala Harris, who really wants to be president in 2020, couldn't wait for that process to unfold. Now, down the road, you know what's going to be interesting? Watching those two go at each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I made reference to the line from Julius Caesar. Cassius has a lean and hungry look. Remember, there was Brutus and Cassius.
Yeah.
And all of the conspirators wound up at each other's throats eventually. And maybe it's because I'm a political cynic, but I fully expect that to be the case here. And you will note that I am saying these things with no recourse and no reference to gender whatsoever beyond simple pronouns.
You're making an observation based on what you have been observing. And there's no downside to that. I mean, that's commendable. And being in California and having been here last year when Kamala Harris was running, she didn't run for that Senate seat unopposed. There was a primary process, and I forget the woman's name who ran against her, the one that I supported. I mean, I liked her. I voted for her to be Attorney General.
Well, you know, we've got a saying here in Appalachia. I like her well enough.
Well, yeah, and when she was running for that job, and I don't know if she was opposed or not on the Democratic side. I don't think she was. She was a shoe-in, basically. I forget the guy that ran against her, but he was yet another California Republican crazy.
See, it's just that I expect politics to be politics, because I have never seen an instance where something political was anything but political. And this smacks of opportunism. And let me throw one more thing in there.
Okay.
Assuming that Al Franken resigns, there will be a replacement named to either fill a set period of time or fill out his unexpired term, whichever comes first, I guess.
And there that is a person. Democratic governor in Minnesota.
Right, right. So it's deemed to be safe. But whoever gets that job, whoever takes that job, will be branded as a Judas goat. Okay? That person's career will be over too, because that person will be someone who collaborated and connived in reaching that seat. And I don't care if the replacement is Jesus H. Christ, I'm going to feel that way.
An accessory after the fact, in other words.
Or perhaps, for all we know, before the fact. Who knows what kind of deal making's gone on? You know, this was a coordinated collaborative attempt. It's not just that a whole bunch of female Democratic senators all of a sudden decided that Al Franken had to go. They had meetings about this. They confabulated about this. And then they, and I presume maybe that there was a heads up given to people like, because they jumped so quickly and so eagerly, Joe Donnelly, Sherrod Brown, Bob Casey, and Chuck Schumer. Now, what tells me that this was actually a coordinated attack is that they conveniently and deliberately left Amy Klobuchar out of the mix, who is the senior senator from Minnesota. She was not one of the original signatories. They made sure that they would not hurt her with the electorate in Minnesota by not having her be part of the original group. Instead, later in the day, she sends out an independent tweet or statement or whatever saying, I've spoken with Senator Franken, and as you know, he has a news conference tomorrow, and I'm sure he'll do the right thing.
But wait a minute. And I know that Roy Moore and Al Franken are two separate and unequal parties here, and their cases are quite dissimilar. But on the one hand, with Roy Moore, you hear everybody from Mitch on down or on up saying, you know, we'll let the people of the voters of Alabama decide. Why can't the voters of Minnesota in future elections be given that same option? Because by that time, should Franken run again for that Senate seat that he's obviously eminently qualified for, because he was elected once and then he was reelected, and we know him by his work, okay? Why shouldn't the voters of Minnesota, by the time Franken runs again, if he did, the Senate ethics thing would be long over, and they would make their judgment. And I have trouble, Democrats and Republicans combined, using the word ethics and Senate in the same phrase. Maybe it's just me. I don't know.
No, that's a valid point. What Gillibrand and Harris et al. Did today was to tell the voters of the state of Minnesota that they do not have the right to make a decision about whether or not to have Al Franken be their senator. They do not. What they did is they infantilized the voters of Minnesota. You're not. I'm sorry. You're not grown up enough. He's got to go now. You can vote for anybody you want as long as it's not Al Franken, okay? That's what they did. They disenfranchised. It was an attempt to disenfranchise voters in Minnesota that will apparently work.
Well, that's bullshit.
Of all the things we've said about Roy Moore, I've not particularly hammered on the idea that he should get out of the race. He won his primary, and he won his runoff fair and square with 7.5% of the eligible electorate. He won it. He's their nominee.
And if it should come to pass, come next Tuesday, that he is even narrowly defeated, okay, by Doug Jones, is it?
Even if
he's narrowly defeated, there will have then been a message from these vaunted voters, Mitch's vaunted voters of Alabama. There will have been a message sent clearly and distinctly, even in a narrow victory by the Democrat on Tuesday, which leads me to think maybe these Democratic senators who are ganging up on Al Franken will perhaps think better.
This is a purge. This is a purge. It's a purge. And if I were a voter in Minnesota, I would be furious.
Well, that's what I was
with Gillibrand and Harris and the rest of them. I'd be furious. How dare you? How dare you make my decision for me? Who the hell do you think you are? Say what you want to about the evangelical freaks in Alabama, and they are evangelical freaks, okay? But I'll give them credit for standing up on their hind legs and saying, fuck right off.
Yeah.
We will make our decision, and we will vote the way we choose, and we will not have you telling us who our candidate will be.
Well, it's a double standard, plus it's a, once again, exhibit A in the argument that the Democrats simply do not know how to play the game. And you don't have to get nasty and dirty necessarily, but you do have to play as if you're intent upon winning, and you do have to play as if you've got some goddamn sense. And we eat our own.
Well, bless their bigoted little hearts. And I can say that coming from there and everything. That whole story, most of that whole account that I gave earlier in the evening, that all happened in Alabama. Some of it did manage to happen up here, though, because he really didn't make a lot of bones about where he did what he did. But say what you will about the voters of Alabama, the state motto, and of course this goes back to the nasty ass days of Jim Crow and racism, is "We dare defend our rights." I don't know. Is the state motto of Minnesota "We'll do whatever some ambitious senator from New York tells us to do"? We'll do whatever some ambitious senator from California tells us to do. Like I said, I came into this program this evening uneasy, scared, because I figured I was going to piss somebody off somewhere along the way. And I guess I've gotten kind of used to it.
Well, who could you possibly piss off by any of this?
Oh, I don't know. I'm sure there's somebody out. There's probably somebody out there who thinks that Franken's got to go because allegations have been made and allegations are enough.
Is there any sense of what he may be up to tomorrow?
I have.
Because he seemed pretty. When he made his last pronouncement a week or so ago, he seemed pretty set to stay and do his work that he was elected to do.
And that's what got him all in an uproar. He wasn't going to lay down on the altar and be a sacrificial lamb.
Well, something stinks about this, needless to say.
You mean like all of it?
Well, yeah. It makes me think of, and I'd only been here a couple of years by then, in the early 2000s, when, for no particular reason other than they thought they had an opportunity to do it, there was this recall Governor Gray Davis movement, and worked in with that was the running of Schwarzenegger. So you got to vote for two different things, and if the recall Davis thing prevailed in this election, then the second ballot question would go into effect, and he would be replaced by Schwarzenegger. As I recall, Schwarzenegger wasn't running against anyone that time around. It was simply asking the voters, do you think he ought to be the next governor? And if the recall Gray Davis thing got the majority, then the other thing would mean that Schwarzenegger would step right in, which to me was crazy because there wasn't any particular reason. There was an excuse, and that is there were some on the other side who thought that Gray Davis was doing a crappy job, which he may or may not have been doing. I don't think he was, personally, but you know how they think. And it's that same sort of trickery, using the system in such a way, in a low-handed way, that troubles me. Again, because of the double standard, and again because, you know, on the one hand, you've got somebody who is eminently qualified, who has really grown well into the job, and they're just going to jettison him like trash and urine from the space station. It just rubs me the wrong way. But anyway, I'm going
to... Well, as it should, you know. Golden Thunder in the chat room said, I'm Minnesotan, and fuck yeah, I'm pissed. One more thing, if the party goes down the path of kicking out all the guys from the club, the party will be condemning all of society to the fate of the Handmaid's Tale. And there's that, too, that there will that there stands to be a backlash from this. And I'm not... if he resigns, I pity the fool who accepts the appointment to replace him.
Well, stepping back and looking at the even bigger picture, like you say, there's always the part of the equation about be careful what you hope for and wish for and work for, because you may not get out of it exactly what you thought you were going to get out of it. And to me, it doesn't do anything more than weaken the Democratic Party, you know, in sum and substance. I mean, I understand what they're trying to do, and to the extent that they have any noble motivation here, which there's damn little of that based on what I'm finding out about this. But, you know, it's not going to play out well in the long run. And there's something to be said for avoiding what appear to be short-term gains and missing out on the outcome that you didn't expect. And I'm afraid we're going to be subject to the outcome that we didn't expect if Gillibrand and Harris and the rest of them are successful. So that's a long way of saying you're goddamn right there's going to be a backlash, and there are going to be consequences, and they're not going to help us, they're going to hurt us. So, well, here I started the conversation upbeat and happy and proud and supportive, and now I'm pissed off. Damn it.
Sorry. I have a way of doing that to people.
I'm not to the point where we're all screwed. But if I stay on any longer, I'll go there, and I don't want to go there because it makes me sad.
I understand. Well, you know what? You know what'll make you happy?
Watching The Big Lebowski.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
In fact, you got
a note from Steve earlier. Scott, this is not NAMM. There are rules. So.
I'll make a deal with you and the faithful. I will not call again until I've watched the movie and put together.
Well, I mean, no, don't wander off out into the goddamn desert, Scott. I mean, you know, I'm not telling you to sing Nobody Likes Me, Everybody Hates Me, I'm going to eat some worms.
I mean, I go out in the yard and eat grass.
Yeah. And, you know, the first thing that came to my mind when all this stuff was breaking, I looked up and went, well, fuck me, it's Wednesday. Kumbaya, my Lord. Kumbaya. Kumbaya, my Lord. And I could just see Kirsten Gillibrand and Kamala Harris with their guitar, and then John Belushi comes along and takes the guitar and smashes it into a million pieces on the wall.
It's not like there wasn't enough crazy shit going on. Now people from our own side have got to stir stuff up. Jesus.
Yeah.
Will Rogers was right.
I do not. Well, I mean, I've been using that all day long. I do not belong to an organized political party. I am a Democrat.
You know, as a party who's so big on gun safety and gun control, you know, and common sense gun legislation, we sure as hell are quite talented when it comes to shooting ourselves in the foot. You know, we are the Barney Fife.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, and I'll just add this into the mix. It's kind of my job, such as this job is, to look down the road and see who's got a shot here and there. And I've thought fairly favorably of Kirsten Gillibrand. And I've figured that she, that she would be running in 20. She was one of the only ones who voted against every single Trump nominee that came through the Senate. That's the sign of somebody who wants a clean slate record. And she's been good on other issues, but I can tell you right now, if she runs in the primary in 20, I will be goddamned if I'll vote for her. Because that's the nice thing about primaries. You get, and I said this all during 2016, you can take your little conscience out and you can walk it around the block and you can play a game of one-on-one hoops with your conscience and you can take your conscience to a picnic and you can just have all kinds of fun with your conscience in the primary system. But if she runs in the primary, she lost my vote today. And so did Kamala Harris. And so did Sherrod Brown. So I'll have to find somebody else. And just to share, because, you know, our conversation has engendered a lot of conversation from others. Les says, I know you may not like this, Bob, but this is the kind of shit Dems piling on and eating their own that leads to the Purity Brigade's fury with the establishment. Yeah, but see, the Purity Brigade was a big part of this. I mean, I understand exactly what Les is saying, but the Purity Brigade was part of this. And there's what a hilarious piece of irony, because I've been watching my Twitter feed all day long, okay? There are hardcore hilarians and hardcore burners. And all of a sudden, all is forgiven because they can turn their baleful gaze on Al Franken. Because I looked at it and went, son of a bitch, something. So, hey, look, they're unifying. They're unifying to destroy one of the better progressive senators in the entire United States Senate. Now, I'll be dipped. But Les's point is well taken.
Yeah, I get that. But it also remains to be seen what Franken's going to say and do tomorrow. And I really hope that he says, look, perhaps you didn't understand what I said last week. And that is, I'm back to work. I'm doing my job for the people of Minnesota and the country. I am ready and willing and able to cooperate with the Senate ethics mechanism. And you can all go.
Well, no, he won't. He won't say that. But while that would be, I guess, somewhat satisfying, if I was to check in with Harris in Reno, I'd say the odds are probably running about 1,000 to 1 against on that. Because the thing is, if he stands up to this immolation crowd, then they're going to ramp it up. These are the type of people who will gladly hold hands with Republicans to carry the attack forward. Now, on the other hand, let's understand, if it should happen that Roy Moore is elected, Mitch McConnell isn't going to give a tinker's damn about what Kirsten Gillibrand or Kamala Harris have to say. He'll tell them to piss up a rope, and he'll make them like it.
Well, are you thinking that Franken's going to step down tomorrow?
Yes.
I'm
almost certain of it.
I think back.
When Amy Klobuchar came out today after not participating in the gang, when she came out separately and said, I talked to Senator Franken, and as you know, he has a press conference tomorrow, and I'm sure he'll do the right thing. You know, that was Minnesota nice. You got to factor the Minnesota nice into it, too.
That's code language, you're saying.
Yeah.
He's going to
resign.
Well, then I'm going to have to rethink my estimation of Franken then.
Really? You're going to blame the victim in this?
No, no. I think back to when he ran against Norm Coleman, when he first ran for that Senate seat, and it was the breadth of a pubic hair's width margin between them, and that long recount and the suits and countersuits. And
yeah, and he didn't, and he didn't get into office until August. Yeah.
Yeah, I think back to that, and then I say, well, it would have to be something pretty horrendous, or appear pretty horrendous, to step aside after all that. That's what I meant when I said I would have to rethink my estimation of Franken, because he, if anything, he's shown himself to be a fighter, especially when he knows that he's in the right. Maybe he's in the wrong. Maybe there's something that has not been disclosed that's become known.
Maybe
to this gang.
You know what?
This
maybe
gang of senators.
The last allegation to come forward, he said he categorically denied it. Now, either this gang has something in their hip pocket that they're willing to use against him, or they've been made aware of something out there that's actually verifiable and real, as opposed to Lauren Tweeden and several different Republicans saying, "He grabbed my butt," you know, the woman from Texas.
Yeah. Or it could be something that they have become aware that the other side has become aware of, and they're trying to step in to short circuit that so that he'll be gone before the other side can use it. And by the other,
well, that's their strategy. That's what these von Clausewitz has come von Clausewitzes have come up with. That, see, Jesus, they're going to show that they'll run all the bad people out of the Democratic Party, and that means that we're pure, and we won't stand for it, and the Republicans don't give a goddamn, and neither do their voters.
No, because they've never played that. They know that.
Yeah.
They do the mouth music along those lines, but as far as ever playing the game that way, hell no.
And in 2018 and 2020, they can run commercials saying, "We slit the throat of one of our own. See how committed we are." You know, who the fuck would trust them? That's the thing. At this point, who trusts them?
Well, now I am thoroughly depressed. Now I am at the point of saying we're all screwed.
Sorry.
I wish Jesus would come back.
You'll feel much better if you watch The Big Lebowski.
I keep hearing that.
Earther sent you a note and said, you know, we're still a few steps away from paying airplanes to haul banners for Scott. Have you watched the movie yet, Scott? So you don't have to if you don't want to, Scott. We still love you, says Earther.
All right. Well, I'm going to be true to my word, Bob. Even though it's not required, I will not be in communication via phone.
Oh, now you're making me feel terrible.
No, and you shouldn't. God, there's plenty of shit to feel terrible about. That's not how I intended. I intended rather to say my intention is
self-motivation. It's self-motivation.
Yeah, it's time for me to, as Nixon said, shit or get off the pot.
Well, I tell you what, you know, if you watch it and you despise it, you can feel free to call back in and say, that's what all the carrying on was about, you fuckers. You can do that.
Somehow I doubt that I will.
We got a pretty good track record here.
Well, you guys are just trying to enlighten me and help me. That's all that's going on here. And why do I resist? Maybe there's something in my character that I need to look at here.
Oh, dear God. No more navel gazing. We've had another one night.
Maybe I'm being an asshole, you know, where I don't need to be. I'm not really, but I'm just... Who the hell knows anymore? I can't tell one moment from the next what the hell is going on in the micro or the macro. And the only thing that leads me to think that everything is going to be copacetic is the fact that Chirps the cat is in the Amazon box, curled up asleep on the sofa that her cat food arrived in the other day, and Punky the cockatiel is in the typical bird, head over its own shoulder, eyes shut, snoozing happily mode. So I know that somehow along the way, things are going to be okay, and I am just too overwrought for my own goddamn good.
Well, you'll be glad to, you'll be interested to know that I saw earlier today, it is Petruchio the cockatiel's birthday, if I understood the posting correctly. That's Joy's cockatiel. So there's
no. Have we heard Petruchio?
No, Joy's never called or anything. We just,
because somebody calls in on Friday that's got a bird, or maybe is outside around birds.
Is that Friday? I think I've heard birds in the background with Todd.
Maybe that's.
And I think that's just because, like, he's outside in the lovely up country of South Carolina.
No, that could be. But it sounded to me like a domestic bird.
What, with like a little apron?
Yes, a little June cleaver and a clutch of pearls around its little birdie neck. Hell, I don't know. Let me get out of here. Jesus.
Thanks, Scott.
The landlord's out of town, and she's asked me to take out the trash, and I haven't done it yet, and it's after dark. So if you hear a loud noise, it's me falling ass over tea kettle, trying to maneuver.
And swearing all the way to the ground, yes. Yes.
All of the fucking trash cans and recycling bins, because it's double Thursday pickup. So if you hear a loud noise, it's just me making a botch of that. I'm surprised they let me roam loose.
Roger that. You take care, Scott.
All right, Bob. Take care.
Bye. Our buddy Scott and Punky in San Diego. Hey, I don't want to let this go by without mentioning it. Thank you very kindly to our buddy Texas T in the chat room. Knocked out half of the minuscule fundraising goal we have to this evening. So with 13 minutes left in the program, we've got all of $40 left to raise. 4 at 10, 10 at 40, you know. $40 left to raise, and we'll stay even for the first 6 days of December. And thanks to everybody who keeps this program on the air. By the way, note coming in from Les. Let me take pressure off Scott. I never saw the Big Lebowski either. Oh, you don't know what you just brought on yourself, Les. You have no idea. Lovely note coming in from Libby. Thank you for being so open. No words to express my deep feelings of sadness and horror for you. My respect for you is magnified many times. Franken should stay. Tell his fellow politicians to put the same on the Republican perverts, who are so much worse. No comparison, including T-Rump. As usual, so goddamn fishy, stinks to high heaven, like everything else going on. And then this. I love listening to your mellow voice, and I'm an expert after 50 years of listening to talk radio. Thank you, Libby. Thank you so very, very, very kindly. All right, let's run out to Wisconsin and see what's going on.
Hey, Brother Bob.
I had a feeling it would be Flavio.
How are you?
I'm okay. How about you?
Depressed.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I
go watch the Big Lebowski.
Yeah, I know. I need to watch that again. I have watched it already. It's hilarious. Listen, I'm depressed because really what he should do is he should come back tomorrow and say, I'm talking Al, he should come back tomorrow and say, okay, I'll resign when the creep in the White House resigns. Okay? That would be fair.
I tend to agree, and in fact, well, a little bit ago, Ezra Klein tweeted, "It's true. If Al Franken should resign, so should Donald Trump. But the fact that Trump won't resign doesn't mean Franken shouldn't. Democrats holding themselves to higher standards is a step towards everyone being held to higher standards. It doesn't happen all at once."
Which makes me want to puke.
Yeah, well, yeah, my response was, it never happens. It never happens.
No,
with Republicans.
And
You cannot shame people who are incapable of shame. And this being prayer
meeting... No, it's okay if you're a Republican.
Right. And this being prayer meeting Wednesday, we need to add something into the mix that the Ezra Kleins of the world don't fucking get. Okay? They have evangelical Christianity in their corner. And evangelical Christianity says, all you have to do is tell Jesus that you're sorry and you'll be forgiven and we'll forgive you. And and no matter what you do, no matter how many little children you grope or feel up or take behind a dumpster and try to make them give you a blowjob, we'll just say, well, you know, he's not perfect, just forgiven. And we'll send you to the fucking Senate.
Exactly.
But there's there's way too many people on our side of this ideological debate who don't know shit about the evangelical religion industry and how their how their concept of forgiveness works.
It's an industry, and they prey on the gullible. You know, some time ago. I know. I'm going to say something. I'm going to put a plug in for Catholicism. Okay, they weren't always a bad religion. Okay.
Well, look. Okay, here. Let me help. Let me help in that regard. I was raised. I was raised.
You like the current pope?
No. I'm not going to go there. I don't have to go there. I was raised a Southern Baptist.
Okay.
We were raised to believe that short of just outright worshiping Satan, the next worst thing you could be was Roman Catholic.
Oh, okay.
And that goes all the way back to the Reformation.
Old England.
And particularly the Reformation as practiced in England, and more particularly the Reformation as practiced in Scotland. Knox and the Presbyterians. Holy God. But the more I study it, now, I have no interest in being a Christian whatsoever, okay?
No, I understand that.
If Jesus is who they say he is, he'll understand. Because all he has to do is look at his followers and he'll go, oh, no, Bob, come on in.
Yeah, I'm not with them.
Yeah. Get a halo. all is forgiven, dude. But the fact of the matter is, the whole of Christianity is founded upon frauds, all right? Fake things. But if you want to get right down to it, the only two that have any legitimacy whatsoever are, first, the Greek Orthodox Church. Because it arises out of the original Christ cult, the one that was brought to Greece by St. Paul and then advances over the next 200-300 years till you get to Constantine. I know you know all that. The second most legitimate is the Roman Catholic Church, which did all manner of evil.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't disagree with that.
But the Protestant Reformation actually wrecked European society and culture, because it was the one universal constant from country to country. It never proved to be particularly good at stopping countries from slaughtering each other.
No,
and God
no.
knows it was personally responsible for the Crusades, but a person in lower middle Saxony had no problem taking the sacrament in a little church in Aragon. You see what I'm saying? Little C Catholic, meaning universal.
I was talking about Little C too. Do you remember the movie The Mission?
Oh, absolutely.
Exactly that.
One last thing, though.
When
the Reformation comes along, you know who the Reformation hurt more than anybody else?
Go ahead.
Women. Now, that may seem crazy, but the fact of the matter is, even though there was a highly unequal system and a highly abusive system and a repressive system under the Roman Catholic Church, at least women had the availability of a calling, to be a nun, to be an abbess, to pursue some sort of holy work in a community of women. That okay. all disappears with the Reformation. And the only thing a woman has left to her is broodmare.
Yeah,
Jesus.
that is true. That but yeah, no. Wow.
And
I hadn't
look,
thought
the,
of that.
The patron,
does that include the Waldensians?
The patron saint of Italy, the patron saints of Italy are Catherine and Francis.
You mean Claire?
No, Catherine.
Saint Claire and Saint Francis?
No, Saint Catherine and Saint Francis.
Saint Catherine and Saint Francis. Okay.
Pretty sure. Okay. And there's lots of female saints in the Roman Catholic Hall of Saints.
That's true. And there's a
well. Guess what? Guess what disappeared with the Reformation?
Women. Full half of humanity. That's
and
true.
It persists to this day. As I mentioned the other night, there was a Baptist church in Tennessee that recently got excommunicated. Really, it was that that's the term for it. They have been removed from communication. A Baptist church in Tennessee got excommunicated because they had the audacity to say we want a woman to be our preacher. In 2017.
But is that mainstream Protestantism? I mean,
you can't get any more mainstream than the Southern Baptist Convention.
I thought Lutherans were.
It's the largest. It's the largest single Christian denomination in the United States.
I thought it was Lutheranism.
Hell no. The largest single Protestant denomination.
You know, like Sweden, Norway, Denmark.
Yeah, no. Yeah, but no. The largest single Protestant denomination in the United States is the Southern Baptist Church.
Wow, I did not know that. Did you know that I did not know that?
No, I didn't know you didn't know that. I don't know if you knew that I didn't know that you
didn't
know that.
I don't.
We're very unknowledgeable people.
I mean, I thought it was Lutheranism.
You thought what was Lutheranism? The what?
The United States.
Oh, hell no. Really? Lutheranism? Shit, there's more Pentecostals than there are Lutherans. With their long denim skirts and their hair up to Jesus.
No, maybe just because I live in this part of the country.
You've been in Wisconsin too long.
Yeah, you're right.
You know all of these snake handling Hosanna rallies for Roy Moore, and all these preachers who are endorsing him. The vast majority of them are Baptists.
Oh, no, I imagine that, but I thought that they were a minority in the United States.
No, baby, no. Oh, no. Why do you think the Republican Party is what the Republican Party is? Don't you remember when Dim Leader was all hot and heavy to start a war against the innocent people of Iraq, and his own church, the United Methodist Church, said, Brother Bush, We're not saying, but we're just saying, this is not a godly action that you want to take. Brother Bush said, fuck a bunch of Methodists. And he went over and talked to the Southern Baptists, and they said, Mr. President, we just want you to know that your war against Iraq is perfectly all right with Jesus Christ because Peter owned a sword.
Wow.
That happened, man. It really, really happened.
No, I mean, but I thought they were fringe. You know, really did.
I can't believe you thought. Flavio, have you been drinking?
No, not at all.
I can't believe you thought the Southern Baptist Church was fringe.
No, what I was saying was that I thought that, you know, there's such a thing as evangelical Lutheran, and so when I think of evangelical Lutheran, I think of evangelical in general.
No. Evangelical is your Southern Baptist Convention. Your Churches of Christ, not the United Churches of Christ, the evil ones. Methodists, some Presbyterians,
see,
some Lutherans.
There you go. I thought that the Lutherans had gone crazy as well.
The Lutherans have gone crazy.
I mean, think of Michelle Bachmann. Isn't she a Lutheran? Or?
She might be one. And it's like the Missouri Synod of the Lutherans or something. It's nuts. But I got to get out of here, Flavio. I'm glad you called. I hope you have a lovely evening. We'll talk again soon.
Hey, can I call back?
Well, not next program if you want to.
Yeah, no, I didn't get to ask you a question. But...
Well, save it for the next program.
I'll save it for the next program then.
Because I got to get out of here because it's 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
It's 9 o'clock. Bye.
All right, later, Flavio. I hate it when people don't get to ask their questions, but hopefully Flavio will ask it another day. Thank you. Thank you, Terry. Terry in Amherst, where they don't pronounce the H. Confirmation. Catherine of Siena. She's also, and Bob, she's a designated doctor of the church, along with Teresa of Avila and others. Thanks so much for your filibobster tonight. Lots of love, Terry in Amherst, where they don't pronounce the H. Thank you, Terry. I felt like I was on solid footing there. Thank you very much. So it's time to get out of here. Thanks, Texas T, for jumping in and knocking down half of the $80 we had remaining. Thank you very kindly. Thank you to all of you who spend your precious finite time engaged in this program. I hope the deeply personal stuff I shared this evening was not too horrifying to people. And if it was, I sincerely apologize. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks this evening to Midweek Utility Pinch Hit chat room moderators and all-around great guy Steve from Georgia Stan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.